Hello. Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and I welcome you back for the second show of With the Fool at the Zero Point. My background is in psychology, and I've studied mystical and spiritual teachings for 30 years, and would like to share as much as I can of my discoveries and teachings through this radio show. You're invited, if you want to place a call at any point during today's show, you can call 888-268-4313. Or you can email me at christopherholmes@rogers.com, and I can respond to email notes. I work under the logos of Zero Point, which is an institute for mystical and spiritual science, and I maintain a website at www.zeropoint.ca. Well, welcome back for the second show. Last week I began with discussions of the enigmas and nature of human consciousness, and I compared the mystical teachings with modern science. And I explained that modern science has generally assumed the head doctrine, which is the belief that the brain, the material brain in the head, produces human consciousness. And this view, a human being has no spirit or soul nature, so when you die, that is the end of yourself or the end of your I. In contrast, I explain in mystical and spiritual psychologies, they all teach the heart doctrine, that the true nature of self has to do with the heart center, the spiritual heart center, as well as the physical heart. Ramamana Maharaji points out, he said, defines yoga as involving union with God, which he defines as involving the dissolution of the mind into the lotus of the heart. So the idea is that our egoic or personality nature is centered more up in our mind, in our heads, and that somehow our deeper level of self is associated with the heart and the awakening of the heart. So last week I began these discussions of consciousness, quoting from different mystical literature and trying to give some more practical commentaries on trying to study consciousness. I introduced the idea of self-remembering, which is the idea that as you go about your life, you make an effort to wake up and be more fully present in the moment. And you try to have these moments of little waking up through your day, and you try to cultivate that so that we can learn to increase consciousness. We want to learn to live more consciously. So we make an effort, a conscious effort, to remember to be more self-consciously aware. We try to do this through our lives. Well, today I was going to focus on the second and very enigmatic concept that my work focuses on, and that is the concept of zero point, or zero points. And I'm going to take a lot of angles on this subject today, trying to explain that concept of zero points from different perspectives. None of these completely explains or elaborates what is meant by the zero point concept. It's a very profound idea, and if we grasped it, we realize what an alternate model of reality it provides if there's truth to this zero-point hypothesis. So that's what I'm going to explain today. I originally had realizations of this idea when I was reading Madame Blavatsky's The Secret Doctrine, which was published in 1888. And in it, she explains esoteric Tibetan Buddhist ideas about creation, and she draws from the perennial teachings of the world's mystical traditions. But in her book, at one point, she says, quote, material points without extension, 0 points, are the materials out of which the gods and other invisible powers clothe themselves in bodies. Now, this is a very peculiar quote. What she's saying is, she's saying that the gods and other invisible powers, their influences, in essence, are brought down to a 0 point, and then around that 0 point is closed in different bodies. So imagine for the moment you have a space within your heart where at some point it's empty inside, empty in this 0 point. And then around that empty space, you have these different bodies, a mental body, an astral body, a physical body, all surrounding a central vacated 0 point, a central vacated center. Now, partly what we're suggesting here is that a human being has a 0 point center. Every living being has a 0 point center. Now, in 1888, Blavatsky talked about the origin of the universe, and she, in the beginning of The Secret Doctrine, she says, before me I see an archaic manuscript, and on the first page there's an immaculate white disc against a dull gray background. Now, on the second page, there's an immaculate white disc, but it has a point in the center. And Blavatsky explained, this signifies the idea of the original point of differentiation. And she predicted in 1888, she essentially said that our universe itself would begin from a point source. A material point without extension. What that means is the point is so small that it's not extended in four-dimensional space-time. So Blavatsky was suggesting our universe originated from a point source. And she was writing this in 1888. Similarly, Kabbalists, and I'll discuss Kabbalist teaching more in a few minutes, they similarly conceive of the universe beginning from an infinitesimally small point. In Kabbalism, the way it's explained is if we imagine God as being an infinite being and permeating all space, well, that infinite being, in order to create a finite universe, has to vacate a space. The infinite being has to withdraw the infinity from a volume of space in order to create a universe. In Kabbalah, this is called the zimzum, the contraction, where that infinite being withdraws from a volume of space. And in Kabbalah, it says that that zimzum, it creates a hollow or a vacuum, even though it is described as the size of a dimensionless dot. So the idea in Kabbalah, in the beginning you have this infinite being who vacates a minute point of empty space. And it's upon that zimzum contraction that happens. That's the first creation process that then begins to help give birth to the universe. So Kabbalah also, for hundreds or thousands of years, has suggested that the origin from a universe from a point source. So this is one idea of a 0 point. And in modern science, scientists now trace the origin of our universe back 15 billion years ago. They trace it to what is called a singularity condition. A singularity condition, to understand what a singularity means, we have to understand something of the uncertainty principle in modern physics. Now, according to the uncertainty principle in quantum physics, you cannot measure both the position and momentum of a particle at the same time. the more closely you try to specify one value, then the more the other value becomes completely unknown or infinite. So if I try to specify the position of the particle to a precise point, its energy level becomes completely undetermined. It passes to infinity. It becomes infinite. Or if I try to measure its energy component exactly, then its position becomes completely uncertain. It's as though when we try to specify a particle to a point, it disappears into the infinite. So we can only measure anything to a certain level of discreteness. And in quantum physics, this is related to what's called the Planck's constant. So there are measurements in physics beyond which we cannot go, and those are called the Planckian units. Now, back in the 1980s, scientists derived the idea of the Big Bang theory of creation, and the idea was there was a huge, like, massive sun that exploded and created all the universe, all the solar systems and galaxies. But over the last 30 years, scientists wanted to know what happened in the first instances of creation, and they now trace the universe back to the time of 10 to the minus 43rd of a second, at which time the universe had the diameter of 10 to the minus 33 centimeters, which is the Planckian distance. So, in essence, they believe our huge, huge universe arose from a point a billion billionth the diameter of a proton, an inconceivably small point source. So this idea, introduced by Blavatsky in 1888, that the universe grew from a point, and taught by Kabbalists for hundreds of thousands of years, has been confirmed in modern times. Scientists now similarly conceive of the universe as originating from a point source, and that it expands from within without. So it kind of grows from a point, and then it balloons into the universe, and has kept expanding for the last 15 billion years. Okay, so that's one example, then, of a cosmos or a living cosmos that has a zero-point center. It grows from a point source. Now, although that idea is accepted in modern science for the birth of the universe, no one really conceives that a human being might similarly have a zero-point source, that you, at some level, yourself, have an I, like we say, I. Imagine having one eye, which is where you emerge as this singularity, and that you grow within without from that point source. So the concept I'm suggesting that a human being similarly has a zero-point source, and that we ourselves are rooted into these deep dimensions of the quantum vacuum. Now, I'll try to explain a few ideas about the different teachings about what such a zero point, how that's described within the human being. For example, Mikhail Avanov, a mystic, he says, the divine spark is buried deep in every soul. We must leave the physical world of matter far behind and rise to the luminous world above to attain the divine principle of our superior soul. I engrave the symbol of the knowledge of the initiates, a circle with a point in the center. Understand me once and for all. I am speaking from experience. For me, this is not mere theory. All my life has been based on this symbol of the circle with its central point. This center, which is in us, we must find. Okay, so Avanov is saying we similarly have a center, and he's saying that's the divine spark, that divine element buried deep in every soul. If we have a single point source, in a way, it is buried deep within us, kind of behind and behind again all of what we know of ourselves, behind our physical body, behind our thought, behind our emotions. It's behind all of these things. Kabbalists compare, they describe the soul as having five levels. And the body, and awareness in the body, is described as like the shoe. So the physical body is just like the shoe of the divine spark. And there's different levels that is from the divine spark all the way down to the shoe of the body. There's different levels, different realms in higher dimensions. So that is one idea, is that the zero-point center is human beings. Zero-point center, it's like a divine spark. In Kabbalah, there's a, I'll draw from a book by Kramer called Anatomy of the Soul, and she explains Kabbalistic teachings. And she's talking about, here she writes, the consequences of Adam's fall, meaning the fall from being expelled from the Garden of Eden, can be compared to a beautiful and expensive piece of crystal that is dropped from a great height and shatters into thousands of tiny pieces, which become scattered over a large area. Adam had contained within himself the souls of all mankind in a state of perfect unity. His fall shattered that holy unity into countless sparks of holiness, which subsequently became dispersed throughout the entire world. It has since been man's mission, utilizing the spiritual inclinations incorporated within his system, to search for, find, purify, and elevate these sparks, that they might return to their source. So in that image, we imagine the realm of Adam is regarded as like a primordial realm, in which there's absolute unity. And then creation happens, and that unity is lost, and there are all these sparks of holiness, which are become the basis for all these different living beings. And all of them have this spark of holiness within them. So this suggests, in the mystical view, that the human being, in a way, actually has a singular I. If we do have such a center, that, in a way, would be what we most mean by the word I when we conceive of I. See, in modern psychology and science, no one thinks a human being really has an I. Like, first we think we're the material body, but the body's composed of trillions and trillions of cells, and each of those has millions of little subcomponents, all the genetic material, and all of those are billions and billions of atoms. So we're composed, as a physical body, we're composed of, you know, billions and trillions of elements. There's no singular I in the physical makeup. So the idea of there being a zero-point I, a central I, what this has to do with is the idea that there is a deep physics to us, that we ourselves are actually rooted into the quantum vacuum. In modern accounts of creation, they explain that the singularity emerges out of what's called the quantum vacuum. And this is important. We'll try to explain, look at this idea of vacuum, of the quantum vacuum. Now, the idea in science used to be that space was essentially empty, that you could empty out all the radiation and matter in the volume of space, and space itself is empty. But in modern quantum physics, the more they go into the substratum of space itself, they seem to come to a field of infinite energy and potential that permeates everything. So space, rather than being empty, is paradoxically the plenum, or it's full. Within space are all these particles and forces, but they're just at an unmanifest level. So So the idea in quantum physics is that the quantum vacuum that seems to be empty isn't really empty, it's really full. And it's got all the particles and forces of nature, but they're latent in the dormant state. So the modern scientist has this view of vacuum genesis, creation out of the quantum vacuum from a point source. Now, once again, this concept of the quantum vacuum is in confirmation both of Blavatsky's teaching and of Kabbalistic teaching. Now, quickly through Kabbalah. Firstly, Kabbalists, they regard the absolute as having a threefold nature. This is called Ein, Asaf, Asaf Hour. Okay, and Ein means nothingness. That is just unspeakable. Just Ein is the highest conceivable, inconceivable aspect of God as nothingness. Asaf means the plenum. That the plenum means God contains all potencies within himself. I'll read a quotation here from a rabbi who defines what is meant by the plenum. He says, the matter is as follows. All the worlds, this is all the matter that is in the Asaf, the plenum. The matter is as follows. All the worlds and all that is in this world, all the creatures of the universe in whatever age they were to exist before they ever entered into this world, with all the souls now on earth and those that are destined still to be created, together with their complete curve of development until the final completion and perfection. All these were included in the word which is called endless, Asaf, along with their beauty and all their fulfillments. So essentially what he's saying is within the plenum is all possible beings and all at all levels of their development and self-perfection. All these things are already latent in the Asaf even before creation happens. And the third aspect of the absolute in Kabbalah is the Asaf hour, which means the limitless light. Okay, that there's supposed said to be infinite light, limitless light that permeates the Asaf. Okay, so we have these three elements, the Ein, the Asaf, and the Asaf hour. Okay, the nothingness, the plenum, and the infinite light that fills the plenum. Now in Kabbalah, those are called the three realms of negative existence. And when creation happens, if you take those three together in a way and you look at negative existence, creation happens, it steps out of negative existence into positive existence, and it occurs from a point source. Okay, and it's described before creation happens, there's this zimzum, whereby the limitless light is withdrawn from a area of a volume of space. The light is withdrawn, and that creates a false vacuum. And then Kabbalists describe a ray of light penetrating into that vacuum, and that leads to the creation of all the different world orders. Okay, so essentially what I'm trying to get at is the modern idea of quantum vacuum as both void and plenum is analogous to the Kabbalist description. The voidness is like the Ein, which is nothingness, but then that voidness is the plenum, which is the Asaf, meaning the plenum containing all potencies in the latent state. So the idea of vacuum genesis in modern times is really in direct confirmation of what Kabbalists have said about creation coming out of a realm that transcends being, and it's called negative existence. Similarly, Blavatsky described, she said in 1888, that space, what the physicists and scientists think is the limitless void, she says, really is the divine plenum and the container of all that exists. So Blavatsky similarly had this concept of the absolute that is both absolute being and absolute non-being at the same time. Anyway, so what I'm saying is the idea then that these zero points are rooted into these deep levels of the quantum vacuum or of the transcendental realm. And when creation happens, a living being emerges from a point source, and living things grow within without. Okay, and you grow through the heart. Now, another angle on zero point, let's imagine if we could see a fertilized human ovum. At conception, a fertilized ovum, if you can barely see it, it's just beyond at the level of perception but with the naked eye. Okay, now, if you looked at the fertilized ovum, in a way, I would call that a zero-point source, okay, because what it is, it's a point which on your level of perception is just, it looks like a point source. You can't differentiate further. It's a tiny point source. Okay, now, that fertilized ovum, it's a point source, but you know that it really has a very complex inner nature. It's got all your genetic information in it and trillions of genetic sequences. So although it looks like it's only a point source, even though it has this incredibly rich and complicated inner structure, it grows from a point source. So if you could see the growth of your physical body, if you could see it in time, at your conception, you would see it as a point. And then as you watched, you'd see it growing into an infant, and into you'd see yourself being born and growing into, you know, through your teens and into middle age, and eventually we get older, and so you would see everything grow from a point source into your material body. Just like our universe, if we could see it in its long body, meaning seeing the universe from its birth to the present moment, see it all simultaneously, we'd see it originate from a point and grow within without until its present size. And scientists now imagine what's going to happen to what's the fate of the universe. And scientists one of the scenarios they imagine is that if there's enough matter in the universe, it'll begin to collapse in on itself. And over time, it'll form more and more black holes. And these will coalesce. And some physicists have postulated that the universe could also collapse back to a singularity at the end of time. Just as it grew from a singularity, at the end of time, it could return to a singularity condition. This is what Madame Blavatsky in 1888 said would happen. She says, cosmos is grow from a point source, expand within without, and eventually they withdraw without within back to a point source and back into the nothingness. Blavatsky describes creation in terms of what she calls 7 days and 7 nights of Brahma. So you have 7 days of creation, 7 cycles of creation, and then you have a period of 7 nights where everything is absorbed back into non-being. Okay, so Blavatsky's idea not only of the creation of the universe, but the ultimate dissolution of the universe, she would say, would be into zero-point sources. And both of these ideas are there now in modern physics. Okay, so we can see the idea of zero point in the creation of the universe. We can see it in the idea of a human ovum, which looks like just a point source, but it grows. See, when an ovum grows, it's not built up from outside. It grows, in a sense, from within without. It has its own inherent intelligence that grows and produces the form of the human being. Now, this general concept of zero point, I'll read a quotation here from Uspensky, a mystic philosopher. He says, the zero dimension or the point is a limit. This means that we see something as a point, but we do not know what is concealed behind this point. It may actually be a point, that is, a body having no dimensions, and it may also be a whole world, but a world so far removed from us or so small that it appears to us as a point. Seven cosmoses related to one another in the ratio of zero to infinity. Now, basically what I'm trying to say here is that the idea of something being a point source or incredibly small, that point can be a whole inner world into itself. But it's out on a different scale of being than our ordinary perception. So something might appear to us to pass into a point source and disappear from view, but really there may be a whole inner world on this lower level of reality. Okay. So I'm trying to explore this concept of zero point, so the idea that we each have a center. And there's, if we take the symbol that's mentioned here, which is a symbol of a point within a circle. Now, in Aleister Crowley explains the mysteries of existence in terms of what he calls Hadet and Nui. Hadet, he says, is the point source of supernal light. The Hadet is the star nature. So Hadet is the point. It's unextended. It's just a point. It's self-luminous. It's a star. And Crowley teaches every man and woman is a star. Every man and woman has that point source of supernal light within them. Now that point is within a circle, and the circle represents space. And for Crowley, that space is nuit. Nuit is a French word meaning night. And we might imagine looking out at the stars at night and seeing millions and billions of stars in the blackness of the night sky. So Crowley is explaining that is similar to our own magical nature, that we, in a way, have this Hadet element, this star, and it exists within this mother space of Nui. Now, the space surrounding the center, in mystical teachings, it's a seven-dimensional hyperspace. And I'm going to try to explain that. But the mother space is seen as having an inherent sevenfold nature. Blavatsky calls it the eternal parent space, and she says it has seven skins. So if, for Blavatsky, we might imagine when the universe emerges from a point source, for Blavatsky, it is emerging out of the eternal parent space, this hyperspace dimension. And then the world is created, the material world, which is a four-dimensional space-time complex. But that four-dimensional space-time complex is established on top of a seven-dimensional hyperspace. In modern physics, there are theories, it's called 11-dimensional KK theory, in physics, that they see the universe as having 11 dimensions, four large dimensions, And they think at every point in within the four large dimensions, they think there is an underlying seven-dimensional hyperspace. Okay, now this concept of then is actually supported, of there being a seven-dimensional hyperspace, is supported by modern physics. You can go to Brian Greene's book, The Elegant Universe, and he explains how in modern physics, at every point in the four-dimensional space-time, they think there is a seven-dimensional sphere or hyperspace at every point. Okay, and in Brian Greene's book, he shows what he calls the Kaluby-Yau space, and this is how the physicists draw these little elements that they think exist at every point in space. It's as if reality is a television screen. And at every point in space, there's a little pixel. And it's every point has a little pixel that we can't see. And it's because of all these little pixels that then we can see the whole picture or the whole screen. Okay, so I'm saying of Aleister Crowley then, the idea is hide it within nous. So there's a point of supernal light, and it's established in seven-dimensional hyperspace. So I'm actually suggesting that human beings have this higher-dimensional physics going on within ourselves. And this higher-dimensional physics connects to the human heart. See, it's like imagine going into your heart and going down, down, down into space, and I think we're rooted down into the grounds of being. Okay, and I don't mean down below us. Down is more within rather than up, rather than down from our center of gravity. It's like going into lower levels of the quantum vacuum. For instance, give an example. In the mystical teachings, they describe within the human being, in the heart, they describe the bliss sheath. And the bliss sheath is described as about the size of a small grape, and it's a mass of light filled with bliss. Now, this light is described as unemergent, meaning that it's not light that radiates away and off in different directions. It's kind of contained in the volume of space. Okay, now this mass of unemergent light in the bliss sheath is not something composed of material particles like atoms and protons and electrons. It's not composed, so it's below the level of the body, but exists within the same space as the body. So within your heart, I'm saying, you have this mass of unemergent light, this little body of light, it's the bliss sheath. Okay. Okay, sorry, just distracted here. So that is the bliss sheath a physical thing? Well, see, it's not a physical thing in terms of made of material components, but it is a physical thing. It's its own substantive. It's a mass of light. It's a mass of photonic energy at a certain level of vibration that it's very intense. But it exists below the level of the physical world. So if I had a mass of lead fall on me and squash my body to the ground, okay, it wouldn't even affect this mass of unemergent light which exists at a different Planckian level. Okay, so let's come back again. So the idea in mystical teachings, I'm saying, is that human beings have some kind of higher dimensional physics to the human heart, and that in higher dimensions we actually come down into the material body out of higher dimensions. And the best way of learning about this is to work with the Kabbalistic trees of life, or the Ladder of Jacob in Kabbalah, where you string four trees of life together. In Kabbalah, it is said by Isaac Luria that God emanates, creates, forms, and makes the worlds. And Kabbalah explains there's four world orders that are created. The first is emanation. That's the divine world. Then you have the world of creation. That's the spiritual world. You have the world of formation. That's the soul, world of the soul or the psyche. And then you have the world made, and that's the material body. So I would say that we as human beings, we don't just have the material body. We have the body, we have the soul, we have the spirit, and then ultimately we have a divine emanation. That's our divine nature, that spark of holiness. So I'm arguing then that there is an actual higher dimensional physics to this. See, our divine nature is not above us. Like, although if you looked at a Kabbalistic tree of life, you'd see it as a hierarchy, and the top sphere called Keter is up at the top, the crown, and it goes all the way down to Malkuth in the feet at the bottom of the tree of life. And it's hierarchical. But really, it's higher is really more within. It's more an issue of within without rather than higher to lower. Okay. God, in a sense, is not above us, like off up in the sky. God, instead, is within us, going into the deeper inward dimensions of ourself within our heart. That's where God is, within ourself. At these deeper, we experience God if we can experience these deeper dimensions of our own heart space. So it's not that God is above us or below us, but more it's within ourselves. Okay. It's an odd thing to give you a radio show. I have no feedback. I'm not quite used to just talking along on my own as this. But anyway, so I'm trying to explain, elaborate different ideas of this concept to zero points and trying to argue that there is an actual higher dimensional physics and metaphysics to the human heart. And that I think we need to take seriously what the mystics say about the heart. And you can read in different religious spiritual literature, like in the Upanishads, where it says at one point, it says, the sun, the moon, the earth, all that is within the outer world is within the lotus of the heart. Now, that's very peculiar, what's being said. It's suggesting that everything in the outer world somehow is within the lotus of the heart center. So the outside world is really not outside. Somehow it's all within the heart somehow, or it can all be reflected within the heart. How is that possible? See, the model, mystics in a way are explaining holographic models of human consciousness. A principle or idea of a hologram is that any part in a way contains the whole, an image of the whole. So any human being in a way, if you could go into the deepest, highest dimensions of yourself, then as you pass into the higher dimensions of yourself expands on the outside because more and more of the outer world is reflected in the inner world, in your higher dimensions. On my website, I have a description of Yogananda's experience of cosmic consciousness, which is an absolutely wonderful expose by Yogananda. And he experiences different levels and states of samadhi. And then he says, at the end, he says, all of a sudden, his body, his his consciousness came back to his body, and he said, losing a little bit his exact words here. I'm going to find this. And, oh no. He says, I cognized the center of my imperium as a point of intuitive perception in my heart. Irradiating splendor issued from my nucleus to every part of the universal structure. So, essentially what Yogananda's experience showed him, somehow everything in the outer universe was connected to this point of intuitive perception within his heart. And as his consciousness passed into these lower levels of his own inner heart nature, his consciousness expanded to embrace the universe. That somehow the whole of the outer world was contained within the world within the heart. Okay, and I have another quotation of this same concept, this time from Muhammad, who says, I, who cannot be fit into universes upon universes, fit into the heart of the sincere believer. Well, actually, that's a slightly different quote, or the point of that. Anyway, if we were to imagine a human being as having an eye, a singular eye, I would connect that with the higher dimensional physics of your heart. And you have that higher hidden nature. And your bodies form around this zero point center. So that zero, Blavatsky says, zero points are the materials by which the gods and other invisible powers clothe themselves in bodies. So at your center, you have this kind of zero point, and then around the zero point, you're clothed in different bodies. So I would say that you come down to mental and emotional astral planes into the physical plane. And you have these interpenetrating bodies that form around this central zero point center. Now, what does all this mean, and how would you get to know your own zero point, and why is this important, that there's so much, and really these are such difficult and complex questions. Even to begin to be thinking sometimes as you go about your life, tap yourself on the chest and just try to cultivate the inner awareness of I, and connect that inner awareness of I in a way connected to the experience of emptiness. In mystical teachings, in a way, it's like in Buddhism, you have the doctrine of emptiness, the teaching of emptiness. Everything is essentially empty. World is really nothing like what it appears. Everything is mainly empty space. Okay, and we ourselves, what are we? In a way, we are this emptiness. We are this emptiness, this no-thingness, this nothingness. And it's because at the heart of being, there's nothingness at the heart of being. And it's because there's that nothingness that it allows you to be aware of all the things, of all the thingnesses, all the physical things in your physical body, sensations and desires and appetites and pains and so on. And then you can be aware of things in your astral body. You can be aware of things in your mind or your mind body. You can have spiritual experiences. You can have all these different things you can be conscious of. And the reason you're enabled to be conscious of all these different things is because there's something in you which is a no-thingness. And it's because of that no-thingness that enables you to be aware of the things. Now, in life, everybody thinks you're the things, and you don't realize how really you are the no-thingness. in a way, in the mystical paths, we try to cultivate emptiness in a way that can be involves non-attachment to our desires, to the fruits of our labors, but living in wakefulness in the moment and cultivating non-attachment. And we want to empty ourselves. It's like they say the lowest level of the soul is essentially passive. But you're not aware of its light because so much is going on in your mind and emotions all the time. So the heart space is full of all the stuff that's going on. So it's like we want to more and more let go of the mind and the thinking and like as in meditation, let go of emotional concerns and attachments and cultivate just experiencing yourself in the emptiness. And in the spaciousness of the emptiness. In a way, consciousness is like a form of nothingness at the heart of being. And it's because of there's this nothingness that allows us to be aware of all the things. So we want, in our own work on ourselves, to cultivate awareness of this inner emptiness or this nothingness. We want to live in that and be less attached to all the things, our mind and our emotions and personal emotions and so on. In a way, all these things bind our consciousness, and we want to kind of resolve emotional issues that bind our attention and our conscious energies. And the more you can resolve things, it's like it frees you more and more. It's like, say you go around all the time, you're always worried about something that's worrying you, and wherever you go, you carry those worries with you. Okay. Well, in a way, you're much freer if you can learn to be present as you go about your life and be awake in the moment, just experiencing the reality of the moment. So then what you do is it clears more and more stuff out of this empty space of the heart. So we want to learn to abide in the emptiness of the heart. One rabbi, he has a nice description here. I'll quote from this. I think it conveys a little bit better what I'm trying to say about working on yourself. The main thing he writes, Rabbi Nachman, the main thing is to nullify every one of your personality traits. You should strive to do so until the ego is obliterated, rendered into nothingness before God. Begin with one trait, transmute it, and then work on a second one. As each trait is thus transmuted, glory will begin to shine through and be revealed to you. God's glory is like light. The material obstructs the spiritual and casts shadows over it. The denser object, the darker the shadow. So here the main idea is he's saying we want to nullify our personality traits. So it's like stripping away things so that we get back to our essential nature. Okay, so again, mysticism is often seen as in Kabbalah, our aim is to ascend the middle pillar. The middle pillar, the spheres on the middle pillar in the Tree of Life represents levels of human consciousness. We want to ascend that pillar. But to ascend that pillar means reconciling the opposites, the opposing forces from the sides of the pillar that hold us down. So everyone in life, we have all these attachments and conflicts, which are all create oppositional forces, which kind of limit and bind us. So the more we're able to resolve our personal issues, it liberates us more and more. So we want to attain this greater freedom. So the less we carry with us personal conditioning and egoic traits and so on, the more we can live in the realm of spirit and freely sense this light within ourselves and feel ourselves within space in a different way. Okay, so I'm coming back to, once again, to 0 point. How am I doing for time here? Let's see. I don't think I've received any phone calls or messages. So this idea then also of consciousness as a nothingness is really important. And to understand consciousness, it's like understanding space. Now consider space, okay? Space, in a way, is a form of nothingness. Like, what, I can ask you, what is the color of space? Now, if you look around yourself, and you see things all around you, you can see all the things in space, existing in space, objects around you, maybe the sky or the lawns. Or you can see objects of perception, but can you see space itself? In a way, I say, no, you can't. Space is invisible, but it's only because there's space there as a form of nothingness that we can be aware of all the things that exist within space. So space, in a way, is a form of nothingness which allows awareness of things. So the mysteries of human consciousness are tied up also in these enigmas of what is space and understanding. So I would say consciousness, in a way, is a conjunction of light within empty space. And because of this divine spark within ourself, this supernal light, the light of consciousness, and then the space, and because of that light and space within ourself, then we can be aware of all these things that give us the content of our lives. So consciousness, in a way, is like a nothingness at the heart of being. And in a way, we want to learn to cultivate being in the nothingness. One Sufi sage says, "Not since God brought man out of nothingness has he ceased to be a traveler." So, in a way, we come out of the nothingness and eventually will return to the nothingness. Okay. Generally, people fear nothingness. We fear annihilation. That's why we fear death. We want to cling to life. We cling to form. But in a mystical path, in a way, we want to give up attachment to form and learn to abide in the formlessness. See, we can cultivate abiding in the formlessness, feeling the nothingness in things, and we can cultivate that. And that's what I'm saying we want to do. We want to cultivate that. In Buddhism, I think they talk about being hollow like a bamboo. That's, in a way, we want to be hollow like a bamboo. And the less we're attached to things, then the more that consciousness, there can be a greater availability of consciousness. See, every time something engages our interest and attachment, it takes up the energies of our consciousness and our thoughts and our emotions. So the more we can let these things go, and then it's like that light can be maintained. We can increase the amount of light. It's like we can convert complexes. If you resolve an emotional conflict, as you do that, it releases all the emotional energies and energies tied up in that emotional complex. And it feels liberating. You feel free of it. Like you struggle under something for years, and then you realize you're not happy, and you get out of it, and you feel free. And it's like you look back, and you thought, how did I ever manage that situation? Well, we want to learn to live more freely in spirit and cultivate this in our life. Okay, so I know we're just after 6 here, so I'm just get ready to close down. I think the next show in this series will be on May 6th, Saturday, May 6th, which is in 3 weeks' time. I do invite listeners to have a look at my website. I've just refinished editing The Heart Doctrine and have a new version of this book, which is now 300 pages long with a lot of extra Kabbalistic material in it, all about the teachings of the heart and beginning to go into the metaphysics of the heart. And I'll be posting some of that on my website over the next weeks. Also, people, you can email me, and if I don't, I'm unable to answer your questions at the moment, then by next week I can print out the questions and maybe respond to you in 3 weeks' time. Okay, maybe I'll find one more quotation here on 0 points. What one? When God created the world, he had to limit himself. From being in infinity, he had to limit himself to become concentrated, and he gathered himself into a single point from which he now projects himself into the whole world. The idea of mysticism that often a microcosm is supposed to work on the same principles as the macrocosm. So a human being as a microcosm, we're said to embody the same principles of creation as are embodied in the macrocosm, in the universe. That's why I look at what modern science tells us about creation of the universe, and I've come to ask, could we similarly emerge from zero-point sources? Do we have a singular eye, this zero point, the first point of differentiation, a God spark within the human being? And I'm trying to take what the mystics say about higher consciousness and the subplanes of existence and try to understand this in terms of modern science and the science of the heart. So I thank you for being with me today, and as I say, I'll be back in 3 weeks' time. One last quote from Robert Frager, psychologist and Sufi master in the U.S., and he says, "The secret of secrets is the divine spark within each of us. Remembrance is remembering that which we already know. It is to get in touch with that divine spark that God has placed within each human being. And that divine spark is the secret of secrets. And it's within every one of us. Who we are is far more than who we think we are." So he describes that divine spark as the secrets of secrets. And that's what I would say about the zero point. The concept of zero points is that there's this divine element, this element that's so small it's beyond the level of material perception, that we have such an element within ourselves. What I'm saying is we need to consider these types of ideas and try to look at them scientifically to try to understand them. And that's what I do through the work at the Zero Point Institute. Also, I've talked about the important idea of seven-dimensional hyperspace. That Blavatsky says seven is the number of the divine mysteries, and that everything in the metaphysical world or in the physical world, everything is septenary, has a sevenfold nature. And this is an ancient mystery teaching, and it's in Kabbalah and Blavatsky, it's in the Vedas, it's in Tibetan Buddhism. Because Tibetan Buddhists say there are 7 degrees of Maya, or Maya, cosmic illusion, and each of those has 7 subplanes. So they're said to be 49 planes of existence. See, it's a law of 7 is inherent to nature, according to the mystics. So I'm very interested in this sevenfold nature. And I like the way the natives define space. Sometimes they say we normally think space is three-dimensional. Well, in a way, the natives have a way of viewing space as being seven-dimensional. It's as though you can go to your right or to your left. Those are two dimensions. Or you can go forward or backwards. There's four dimensions. Or you could call that east, west, north, and south. And then you have above and below, Father Spirit and Mother Earth. So you have six dimensions. And then the seventh dimension would be within your heart. The seventh dimension is at the center of all the other dimensions. So if you can imagine representing three X, Y, and Z axis in the volume of space, okay, but you always have the center point. Everything revolves around the center. And the same thing with us. In a way, the seventh dimension is within your heart. It's within this higher dimensions of your heart. And we want to strive in our life to understand our own heart. There's mysteries of the heart which are signified by all these mystics of different traditions.
Dr. Holmes?
Yes?
Thank you. It's been wonderful, but we have gone over about 10 minutes, 15 minutes?
Yeah, we did. I appreciate that. Thank you very
much.
Not
a problem. Not a problem.
Okay, good day. Goodbye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.